Good afternoon, everybody. Can you all hear me okay? Yes, thanks very much for the invitation to come and talk to you this afternoon. What I'm going to do is to sort of give a view from the front line, I suppose, if you like, from a public library perspective, from a practicing librarian, and the kinds of things that affect public libraries and their customers. And as you would have gathered from the previous presentations, this is a situation which is changing all the time. It's a very dynamic situation, as the last two questions demonstrated, and I'll try and address some of those as we go through. And just to start off with a kind of explanation, or partial explanation, the reason for the title of this presentation, The Dangling Conversation, just looking at the age of the audience, I suspect that you may not know this is a title of a song by Paul Simon from the 1960s. So I'll just explain a bit about that. It's a song about a relationship that's probably gone on a bit too long, and there's lots of unresolved issues. And so this is a bit about trying to resolve some of those issues, if you like. And I suppose one of the kind of slightly surprising things, so lots of people are surprised that public libraries are involved in e-books at all. And I think, you know, lots of people may have been surprised by the statement from Johanna before about, you know, the scale of the take-up of e-books in public libraries. But just to give a bit of background, we've got the best part of a decade of experience of this kind of stuff in UK public libraries. Way back in 2000 and 2001, there was a project in Market Harborough, which didn't last very long. And perhaps one of the reasons for that was that they were trying to lend devices, and nobody's really tried to do that very much since, because the devices are changing all the time. And the question, I suppose, is what's the benefit of borrowing a device from a public library compared with borrowing 12 or 14 books or so on? So that didn't really last very long, didn't take off. But a couple of years later, different pilot projects started off, which started to ask some of the sort of main questions about public libraries and e-books, what they were trying to do and so on, until we come up to date, and certainly over the last couple of years or so, things have started to take off, and as we've got on their overdrive, we've got at least 35 UK library services tied up. And over those 10 years, of course, public libraries have also been getting experience of e-stuff through the People's Network and all those kinds of things too. But I suppose the basic question is, why should public libraries be interested in this kind of material in the first place? And certainly, you know, around 2000, 2001, that's a very good question, I think, then, because nobody really knew why they were doing it. And certainly from the public's point of view, there was hardly any demand for e-books of any kind. And that's probably one of the reasons why the Market Harborough pilot didn't take off in the way it might have done otherwise. But after a bit of experience, it became clear that there were things that public libraries might want to do with e-books. And probably the most important of those was that they could try and reach new audiences. They could reach audiences that perhaps couldn't come to the library for whatever reason, and so they could provide remote access. They could provide access to people that were on the move all the time, if they were commuters, for example. And there was also potentially a market for people that had some kind of visual impairment or that couldn't use print, although the kind of initial feeling about that was that perhaps e-books might be the perfect solution for this kind of audience. It does depend very much on the system that the e-books are made available by, and if the system isn't something that people with a visual impairment can use, then there's not much use in having it, really. And so there has been a lot of work done recently on trying to make those systems a bit more user-friendly from that point of view. But there are also questions about stock management. We've heard about the sort of more efficient supply chain, if you don't have to go through sort of layers and layers of different suppliers, and also different supply models. And so there are that kind of mix of reasons why public libraries would be interested in e-books. It's a question of sort of approaching different audiences and providing new services in a different way. So you would have thought that after 10 years of experience that you'd be able to answer fairly simple questions quite effectively. So, for example, if somebody comes up to you and says, "Do you offer an e-book service and can I use it?" then you would hope that those questions are quite easy to answer. Unfortunately, they're not. For a start, the question is, you know, what kind of e-book service do you mean? As we've just heard, there are download services like the traditional lending library model that's offered by Overdrive and ASUS and so on. You've got online services which usually offer this kind of access to all of your members all of the time, things like Public Library Online and eBRI. And you've got other models which are kind of variations on those themes, and I think you're going to hear from Dawson's a bit later on. So straight away, if somebody comes in and says, I've got an ebook reader, they don't normally expect you to say, well, yes, we've got ebook services, but you can't read them on an e-reader. So that's going to confuse the public straight away. So if they have got a device, then clearly the next question is going to be, can I use my device and your service? Well, but before they get to that, they want to know if they can use it remotely or if they have to come to the library. And if they do come to the library, can they make use of the service there? And again, the answer to those questions is going to be different depending on the kind of service that you're offering. As I mentioned, there are lots of different devices, and you've heard about some of those today. Most public library ebook services are designed primarily for use by people that have PCs and laptops. That's a kind of default provision. But most of those services can also be downloaded onto handheld devices and smartphones, as we've heard. And the online access services that I mentioned can also be used by handheld devices that have got network capability. But the problem is that lots of handheld devices don't have that kind of capability. So again, it's confusing for the public's point of view. And I suppose it's probably fair to say that public libraries are rather more affected by the changes in market and handheld devices than academic libraries are, although I stand to be corrected on that. But I think the main message that we get in public libraries from people who've got devices is that they don't care about other devices, that they just want a service that works on what they've got. And they don't want to know anything about different formats and compatibility and all those other things that librarians and publishers are so keen on. And what's more, e-reader has been around for a long time now. This thing on the left from 1998 is the Rocket Book, and the one on the right is the latest version of the Kindle, I think. And the problem that we in public libraries have is that all those things are around all of the time. And so somebody can come in with an e-reader from 2001 and expect to be able to download your service onto their e-book, and it's not entirely clear if they can or not. And just to make things worse, it's not just about e-readers, it's about multifunctional devices. So the thing on the left is the Palm Pilot from 1997, which lots of people actually used for reading back in those days. And on the right, I'm sure you'll recognise the iPad. And again, there's a whole range of multifunctional devices that have come out over that period. And what's more, there's lots of different formats that go with those different devices. Mobi Pocket, PDF, Microsoft Reader, a whole load of them. Over the last couple of years, people have started to move towards .epub as more of a kind of standard format, but there's still some way to go with that. And if you look at the market as a whole, there are at least 25 formats, I think, that people can come in and ask you if you've got an e-book in that format. And this is complicated further, as we've heard already, by DRM, Digital Rights Management. And what that's designed to do is to control access to copyrighted digital material. And in the library context, again, as we've heard, it usually provides the facility for managing loan periods and those kinds of things. But again, many handheld devices aren't designed to cope with DRM, and that, again, is a source of some confusion to the public. And this is a fragment of a page from Wikipedia, which gives you all of the e-readers that they know about down one side and all of the formats across the top. And this goes on for pages. Worked out there are something like 1,500 possible combinations of different readers and devices and formats. And you can see on there that although there are a few green squares, there are also quite a lot of pink ones, which means that those devices aren't compatible with those formats. And there are some which are even more confusing because they are compatible with the format, but they're not compatible with the format if it's got DRM, which is very confusing from the public's point of view. And if that wasn't confusing enough, here's one perhaps a further layer of confusion, just to kind of demonstrate the kind of practical problems that public libraries often get faced with. This is an iLex e-reader, and there are lots of different versions of this. And if you look it up on that Wikipedia chart, it will tell you that it can read all those formats that we mentioned, and it can cope with DRM too. But we had a borrower who still couldn't get our service to work on their reader, despite the fact that all the spec and everything said that it should do. And there was a very simple reason for that, which is that that particular version, that model, that e-reader, didn't have a clock in it. And because of that, it didn't understand the concept of a loan period. So he was about as bemused about that as we were. So, in summary then, and then just to confuse things even further, as we've heard, there's audiobooks in e-format too, which again you can get in different formats. That you can get Apple formats, you can get Windows formats, you can get MP3 formats, and nobody really knows from the public side what kind of machine they've got, because when they went into Dixon's or whatever, they were told, yes, of course it worked with everything, but of course it doesn't. So, the dangling conversation then, in terms of technology, means that we're in this situation at the moment, which is completely unresolved still. The e-readers have come and gone and come back again. There are lots of other multifunctional devices, which are in fact probably more popular in terms of reading. I think more people read things on the iPhone and the iPad than they do on the Kindle still, possibly, just about. Lots of different formats have come and gone. Some have stayed, some have come back again. DRM is still a great problem for people because they don't understand it. And in some cases, although it is actually about rights, in some cases it seems much more about restrictions. And some of the things that DRM makes ebooks do mean that some libraries can't do what they need to do with ebooks. So it can actually contradict the rights that libraries have in terms of keeping different generations of versions of titles and so on. So in summary, there's still a fundamental lack of standards and a fundamental lack of interoperability in terms of technology. So that's the technology side of things, as if that wasn't bad enough. There's the law for public libraries. This is comparatively recent. It's March of last year. It's a bit from the DCMS review, Public Libraries, the sort of last gasp of the last government about public libraries. They wanted to make a statement about e-books, and Proposal 34 said that government expects e-books to be loaned for free, and that they were going to make an affirmative order which would prevent libraries from charging for e-book lending of any sort, including remotely. Move forward a couple of months, change of government, change of view. July, same year, Ed Vasey made a speech, 1st of July last year, which was his first sort of major speech to the public as minister. But didn't actually say anything about e-books, although people were expecting him to. And so the Financial Times followed that up, and the minister said that he'd like to understand more about the different views of stakeholders before making any decisions about the question of e-books in libraries. So that was last July, and we've all been waiting agog ever since. And so far, that position hasn't changed. This is a quote from the bookseller on the 5th of May. The minister touched on the issue of e-lending, calling it a live and lively issue, which is perhaps the understatement of the month. I know that the debate around e-book lending is lively. I believe it's important that content creators and owners make money from their product. I'm sure we wouldn't disagree with that. And I think in the physical publishing world, we've had a very harmonious relationship between publishers and libraries, and I hope that continues in the digital publishing world. Well, so do we. But we're still no clearer about what the legal position is. Which kind of leads us on to another dangling bit of the conversation about the commercial situation. And, of course, this was alluded to just now. Last October at the Public Library Group conference, an announcement was made by the Publishers Association setting out four criteria for the lending of e-books through public libraries. Three of them weren't terribly controversial, although some people might sort of feel that they were. But the fourth one really was, which said that e-book lending in libraries would see library users blocked from downloading e-books outside of the library premises. Which, considering that just about every single public library service, which is about lending digital stuff, is based on remote access, rather put the kibosh on what people were doing. So not surprisingly, since October, public libraries who don't have e-book services already have not been queuing up to get them until this is resolved. And it hasn't been resolved yet, but there's been further complications, again, as we've just heard. about the 26th loan cap on e-book circulations. This is in the States, but HarperCollins in this country have said that they are also thinking about a similar kind of thing. Circulate only 26 times before the license expires. 26 loans is a rather peculiar figure, because certainly most public libraries would expect to get at least sort of 40 loans out of a paperback, if not more than that, and certainly more out of a hardback. It was also tied in with the 2-week loan period, so I think you can view this as possibly being 26 times 2 equals 52, which could be viewed as being an annual subscription. But the trade-off with an annual subscription approach is normally that you get multiple access to that title, whereas this is simply a license to lend one book to one person at a time. But what it does do, I think, is act as a timely reminder to public librarians that what they're doing when they buy e-books is simply buying a license to provide access to that book. They're not actually buying the thing forever, even if that's what they thought they were doing. So, where are we now with publishing? This is a report again from the bookseller from the 2nd of May. Richard Mollett, chief exec of the PA, said, "We're having almost constant interaction with the librarian community, and it is ongoing. The meetings are being held in a very constructive atmosphere. All parties fully appreciate the other party's constraints and desires, and we are exchanging perspectives on what's possible." I think what you can gather from that is that it's not quite as clear-cut as the announcement was in October, and that publishers perhaps, you know, have started to think, well, you know, the more that public libraries tell them about their, you know, the way that they work, that they can see what public libraries are trying to do and whether or not they are a serious threat to them or not. But as I say, the situation still has to be resolved. And this is where, this is a white paper that was produced by Overdrive a couple of years or so ago. I don't know if you can see that. What it says is how e-book catalogues at public libraries drive publishers' book sales and profits. And this goes back to what Johanna was talking about earlier on, is that far more people actually go to a public library e-book catalogue than borrow something from it. And the reason for that is very simple. It's that most public libraries simply can't afford to fund the level of demand that's made of their service. And so it's possible, I think, for public libraries to say to publishers that what public library catalogues are doing is actually showcasing what publishers have available. They're not a threat in that sense. What they are is providing a shop window for your product. And if we get more and more demand to provide a decent service, what public libraries are going to have to do is to buy more and more copies, which presumably is something that publishers would expect us to do. So, but as I say, that's an area which is still under discussion, and we'll have to see where that goes to. But as we've just heard at the end of the previous session, Amazon are going to allow library lending of Kindle books in the States through the Overdrive service, and we hope that that's something which will become available in this country too. Because the one thing up until now, in fact, you know, still now because it hasn't changed, but the one thing we could be confident in public libraries of saying was that if somebody came into a public library with a Kindle, we could say, "Hello, yes, that's a Kindle, and you can't use our service." Because Amazon simply have not been interested in providing service via public libraries. But as we've seen, you know, that even that has now changed. And that in itself is a pretty fundamental, crucial, important thing. But there's a kind of barely seen part of that, which I'm going to refer to now, which I hope is even more important than that, which is that that not only is the Kindle going to be compatible with the Overdrive service, but it's going to be compatible with all the stuff, it seems, that public libraries already have. So the one fear that public libraries have had so far is that when the Kindle became compatible with public library e-lending was that they'd have to buy yet another format. But it seems, and I'm sure Johanna will correct me if this isn't the case, but it seems as though that's not something that public libraries are going to have to worry about if that becomes available over here. And so all of these worries about different formats and different devices and so on start to recede, hopefully, if there becomes a device which can read all of these different formats. But, you know, we'll see if that arrives or not. So, we've got a whole range of questions, and I said that if public libraries didn't provide service of e-books up until about 6 months or so ago, they probably wouldn't have started in the last 6 months simply because so much is changing so quickly that they probably don't really know where to start. And those people who have been providing services for a lot longer than that are hoping that things are going to settle down again fairly soon. And as I say, there are these promising signs. But to get back to the dangling conversation, what does an undangled conversation look like? Well, we would like to have definitive clarification of the legal situation at some point. Ed, please. We would like to have an agreement on a protocol between libraries and publishers that everybody's happy with. It would be helpful if we had a wider use of standards, which would then enable things to be more compatible between different devices and formats, but it may be, possibly, that the Kindle development may be an answer to that. I don't know. So this has been a kind of warts and all approach from the front line, if you like, of public libraries, which may give you the impression that things are, you know, a lot more complicated than perhaps you thought, and that's probably because they are. But hopefully, as I say, that things are moving in the right direction after a period of, you know, 6 to 9 months of quite a lot of turbulence, I think. And I hope that things will move forward much more quickly towards an undangled solution fairly soon. Thank you very much.
We've set a time for a few questions for Martin, if anybody wants to kick off.
I'm the gentleman from the Netherlands again, Craig, and the lawyer also. I was triggered by what you said about the publishers associations core criteria, especially the last one you said, really recommended access at the library premises.
Yes.
This is precisely the solution that the publishers are discussing now in the Netherlands.
Yes.
And frankly, and I'm sorry to say so, from a copyright perspective, such a solution would make more sense and probably give the publishers some resolution about not having to actually compete with libraries and offering downloads. How would this be
The problem from the public library point of view, apart from all the benefits that I mentioned before about remote access and different audiences and so on, is that for most public libraries in this country, it's not actually technically possible for them to provide a download service in the library. It gets very complicated in terms of firewalls and all kinds of other things. And also the way that public access terminals are set up in public libraries, they normally work in sessions that last an hour or perhaps 2 hours. And if you're downloading something onto a public access terminal during that period, the way that most of the download services work is that at the end of that hour session, the loan gets wiped out on that machine. And so it doesn't. And so unless the person has been able to transfer it onto a handheld device, then they can't continue to use it. And it's not usable by anybody else until you get to the end of that loan period. So it's not a very satisfactory arrangement, to say the least, really. So it's more a technology question than a copyright question, I think, really.
Can I just ask Martin, I think one of your slides, or you certainly said it at one point, that is there a kind of danger here that if we do get over the format issues and Amazon come on board and so on, that you're going to start creating such a demand that you simply won't be able to meet it? And, you know, what sort of challenges does that leave you with, I guess?
Well, I think for lots of public libraries, to get a level of demand that they couldn't meet is something they'd quite enjoy at the moment, actually. But having said that, yes, it becomes a kind of self-determining thing. And I suppose the question is how far they could continue to provide the traditional service if the e-service was something which took off. Because we've heard, you know, that e-services are taking over more and more of the budget that, you know, that public libraries have. But obviously they still have to meet their traditional demands as well. So I suppose the question then is that they would have to demonstrate to their parent bodies that there is this increase in demand, and, you know, despite the current climate, they would have to try and find some extra money from somewhere, hopefully. He said naively.
Related question, how much of a fear, how much of a worry is it for libraries, the 26 book loan? I mean, it seems like print books quite often haven't been borrowed for the last year, you know, according to the date stamps in front.
Do you mean?
How much of a worry is it for e-books? Do you have any sort of figures of how often the e-books that you have are used?
Well, we've got e-books which have gone out a lot. And of course, with the simultaneous access model, it's possible, you know, for example, in Essex, we've got 500,000 people that belong to the library, and it's possible for them all to read the same page of the same book at the same time in some services. So it's not a concern in that way. The concern, I suppose, is that that we understand the publisher's concern, because what they want to do is to be able to send, you know, that if a book in a paper format becomes unusable after 40 or 50 loans, then the library has to buy another copy. And we understand that they would not expect just to sell us an e-book version once, I think. But the question is where that dividing line is drawn, I suppose.
I'm misreading the paragraph you said. They say that it has to be downloaded. I mean, you have to read it in it, or can you put it on your e-reader and walk out straight away with it and read it where you like? Because if that's the case, it makes the nonsense of them downloading it in the public library as opposed to accessing it remotely with the appropriate logins and downloading it at home.
No, that's exactly what it says. I think their concern is that people... how shall I put this? The physical act of having to come to the public library is something which people have to decide to do. If they're able to do it remotely, if it's too easy for them, if you like, the public library service appears to be, you know, providing access in a way which they hadn't anticipated, perhaps.
Might get used.
Might get used.
You can't make life easy for
But no, I think the thing they were concerned about was that people might be joining the library from Russia and downloading it. And so what they're looking for is for there to be some kind of more discernible physical link between the end user and the library service that's providing that book.
This is about where you're from.
Yeah.
You don't have to live in the county or anywhere to actually be a member of the library.
Sounds more about identity management.
Yes.
Authentication.
Yeah. Yes, and authentication is something which I left out of this presentation because we only had half an hour.
Okay, next up. Ellsworth.
I just wondered if there are some different business models that have been a bit more established in the academic sector, where, for example, if they have simultaneous access, there's a cap, and after a certain amount of use, you have to negotiate something extra, so that's something that could be built in.
Yes.
And then in terms of, again, the academic sector, with the e-book models and demand-driven acquisition, there are some ways whereby you can have a look for 10 minutes without triggering a charge, and it must be something that Overdrive and could perhaps build into their workflow whereby they can see if stuff is downloaded from the public library because they've been looked at for 10 months because you're stuffed if somebody looks in, doesn't like the book, bounces out, and you've got to wait 2 weeks before somebody else can borrow it. So they need, possibly your suppliers need to do some work on the platform.
Yes, and I'm aware that lots of suppliers are doing precisely that at the moment. So, yeah.
I think the linear lending model, is it called, is quite common. I don't know if you might be mentioning that in a second. Okay, Martin, I think we're going to wrap that up at that point. Many
thanks
to you for that.
Thanks.